What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play! Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
The toughest players to rank for 2022, four from Jamie, four from Heath. Welcome, everybody, to Fantasy Football Today. If you want to send us a question, you can email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That is the letter I. And if you want to see what we look like, you can watch us at youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Good morning, gentlemen. When you look at players who are tough to rank, you know, what do you kind of fall back on? Opportunity, talent, history, or is it case-specific? Heath, when you look at some of the guys, like the players you gave us today are Trey Lance, Ezekiel Elliott, DK Metcalf, and Dallas Goedert. A lot of talent here. What do you fall back on when it comes to players who are tough to rank?
I don't, like, when you mean what do I fall back on, like how do I end up ranking them?
Yeah, I think so. Or what ends up being the deciding factor?
It's a blend for me. But I think situation, and if like it's easier with DK and Goddard and Metcalf, maybe because they have at least some history to lean back on. With Lance, I mean, it's a lot of guessing.
Yeah, Jamie, it was a really bad question, the whole what do you fall back on thing. So is there a common thread in your four players that you gave us? Breece Hall, Chase Edmonds, Jaylen Waddle, and Marquise Brown. What makes them so difficult to rank?
I mean, you have rookie, player on the team with new coach, player with new coach with additional mouth to feed, maybe better mouth to feed. I don't think it's a bad question. It's you asked for four, you know, I'm sure Heath and I probably could have given you 44. You know, there's, you know, a lot of uncertainty with a lot of players. You know, I mean, I think that's why you see, you know, if you really pay close attention to our rankings page, I know Heath is updating his rankings. He doesn't always publish them. Dave and I change them all the time, you know, in terms of updating our rankings, you know. So it's an ever-evolving process. I mean, I went through, you know, after being away for a week and just thinking about different players, you know, Adam, you and I texted about a few of them and changed a lot, you know, and will continue to as things continue to evolve with, you know, rookie camps or rookies reporting now and training camp starting, you know. So it's there's a lot of things that go into it.
Yeah, Breece Hall is one of your guys, and I feel like every running back in the Breece Hall range is hard. You know, right. Antonio Gibson, Travis Etienne, J.K. Dobbins, Elijah Mitchell, Josh Jacobs, Zeke. Zeke goes ahead of this group, but it's tough. It's a tough part of the draft, I think, at running back. But all right, if you guys want to give me a headliner here, Heath, how about you go first? Give me the, I don't know if it's the toughest, but one that you want to talk about, one of the toughest players to rank.
I think the toughest player to rank is Ezekiel Elliott, because if what the Cowboys tell us is true, that he just was hurt last year and that's why he was so bad in the second half of the season, and if what they're telling us now is true, that he's completely healthy, we know how much they love him. We know how much money they owe him. Like, he could absolutely be a top five running back again. But if he was just washed at the end of last year, then he could be a high-end flex.
First five games of the season for Zeke, he scored 17.7 or more PPR fantasy points in four of the five games. I think we all remember the one that he didn't. It was week one against the Bucks, where he was terrible, but that was the Bucks, and everybody's pretty much terrible against the Bucks. Then he went nuts, 17.7, 26.6, 20.3, 25.2 fantasy points per game. Zeke got hurt in week four. He was explosive in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. He did have those big runs, not huge runs, not 50 yards, but you look at 12-plus yard runs, which is how True Media defines explosive runs. He had a lot of them early, and then it just stopped. So I think it's easy to conclude that the injury had something to do with it, but then again, it's kind of, you know, it's an older guy. He's going to be 27 years old. He is 27 years old, I think, sometime this month. And yeah, he is tricky. Is he ahead of that group I was talking about, Heath? The Breece Hall, Antonio Gibson, Josh Jacobs, Travis Etienne, J.K. Dobbins group?
I have him ahead of all of those guys. He would not, in full PPR, be ahead of Etienne if we found out James Robinson was going to miss the start of the year. He would not be ahead of J.K. Dobbins if what J.K. Dobbins tweeted yesterday is true and he's certain to be ready for week one. But yeah, he's in that group, but at the front of it for now. And I think it's hard to argue that those guys have more upside than he does.
Jamie, who's the toughest player for you to rank, or one of the toughest?
I mean, you go with the two Dolphins for different reasons, but I keep waiting to find out what's the status of Raheem Mostert, because that will impact Chase Edmonds to a degree. I think Edmonds is the one you want to draft first, and I keep moving him up because of some of the guys around him, but I'm not comfortable with it from the standpoint of he's really struggled as a feature back. He's better used, I think, as more of a complementary back. I don't think he's going to be a true feature back with the Dolphins, because whether it's Mostert or Michelle or both of them, they're going to get touches and carries. And so Edmonds has the most upside because this might be his best opportunity. And that's saying a lot, because he went into last year with a huge opportunity. But the guy behind him, I think, is more proven in Arizona last year than the guys behind him now in Miami. So we'll see how things go for Mostert and for Michelle. But, you know, you always look at certain situations. And this was the first running back signed in free agency. This was a team that we know is going to bring a better run-based system than they had last year, because that's what Mike McDaniel does and certainly hopefully carries over from their time in San Francisco. Better offensive line, better offense in general. So Chase Edmonds has a ton of upside, but still makes me a little nervous to keep moving him up based on what I think he's going to do based on the guys around him.
In 9 games with double-digit carries, Chase Edmonds has averaged 13.6 non-PPR and 17.7 full PPR fantasy points per game. Those numbers in 2021, those per-game numbers would have made him number 8 per game in both formats. So in 9 games with double-digit carries, he's been a top 10 caliber running back. It hasn't always been pretty. He has scored some touchdowns. He's not necessarily blowing the doors off of it when he's running the ball. And there's that one game, the first of those games, which was week 7 in 2019, when he scored over 30 points against the Giants. He hasn't been nearly as good since then, but he's pretty good when he gets that work, and he usually is only getting about 12 carries. He's not getting more than 12 carries in most of those games, but I guess 4 of the 9, but 5 of them he had 12 or fewer carries, I think. So, we'll see what happens. I guess there just seems like there's been some hesitation by the previous coaching staff to use him in that role, unless there's been an injury. And that brings us to our unofficial stat of the day. It's pretty close to official, but might be a little bit off. But the bottom line is Tua Tagovailoa in 2 seasons has not really thrown to his running backs. In 2021, running backs had a 14.2% target share. All running backs on the Dolphins from Tua Tagovailoa, 14.2% target share. Thank you to Heath for helping me with that stat. And in 2020, there were 2 games where Tua got replaced by Ryan Fitzpatrick. I took those out, just the games that he started and finished. Running backs had a 15.4% target share. So around 15% each of the last 2 seasons, Heath. That's running back target share from Tua Tagovailoa. How does that measure up?
It's bad. Definitely bottom third of the league, probably close to bottom 5 most years. And if you look at the Dolphins and how they ranked as a team in that regard, they were around 17%. So it's pretty obvious the other guy was throwing to running backs more than Tua was. Mike McDaniel's offense in San Francisco has been around 20% the last 3 seasons. So, listen, we see a lot of times with younger quarterbacks that as they develop, they dump the ball off a little bit more than they have in the past. I would expect we're going to see Josh Allen this year dump the ball off a little more than he has in the past based on the changes they've made. So I don't think we should lock Tua's first 700 pass attempts in as he's just not going to throw to his running backs. And he's not as mobile as a lot of the other guys who don't. So I do still think there's some hope, but I had the team projected at a 19% running back target share. I may pull back one or 2 points.
Yeah, I love it when the stat of the day changes the projections. It makes me feel like I've accomplished something.
It's a little strange, though, like when you look at system versus player, because like we talk about this a lot with Russell Wilson, right? You didn't throw to his running backs in Seattle. How much of that was the offense? How much of that was him?
Right.
How much of this is Tua? How much of this was the offense? And the offense in San Francisco is a little weird when you look at the running backs, because they didn't have a lot of receptions from their feature guy. But what do we know about the 49ers running backs under Kyle Shanahan? The feature guy changed every year. And so Carlos Hyde in the first year with Kyle Shanahan, I think he was over 40 catches. And that continued to slide, you know. You factor in Kyle Juszczyk and what they did with their fullback. And so how much of it was a running back position? How much of it was the feature guy, what we like to consider the feature guy? And then you look at the caliber of running backs that they had. Elijah Mitchell doesn't profile like that. Jeff Wilson doesn't profile like that. You know, these type of running backs that they've had there. And so Chase Edmonds is certainly much more of a pass catcher. But again, how much of that now is going to be on Tua? So we'll find out, you know, what they do. And again, this kind of ties into Jalen Waddle, you know, and like Dave was talking about this, I think last week or the week before, it had to be the week before, in regards to, you know, Waddle still being a high volume receiver because of what the run game and the pass game extension will look like. And so that's what makes me a little bit concerned about Waddle and Edmonds, is that how many receptions will Jalen Waddle continue to have, Tyreek Hill continue to have with a short area passing game? Will that take the ball out of throwing the ball to Edmonds, for example?
I think the weird thing is that Tua hasn't really thrown to his running backs much at all, and his ADOT, or whatever you want to call it, his intended air yards per pass attempt, is so low. It was one of the lowest in the NFL last year, averaged 7 yards per attempt. Not 7 yards, well, no, 7 yards air yards per attempt. Sorry, 7 air yards per
attempt. I think that's something, though, you could see with both the 49ers and with the Dolphins. Like, when you have wide receivers running routes 2 yards from the line of scrimmage, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have a running back running around out there either.
Right. Also. So maybe, I don't know, maybe this opens things up for Chase Edmonds if we get a little bit more depth from Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill.
But it's also, you know, just to wrap it up, I think from Edmonds' standpoint, this is probably the best system he's going to run in. And so does that allow him to maybe improve and show some things that are a little bit different as a rusher?
Hope so. And I hope the offensive line is better. You know, they're going to be much better at left tackle. Better. Yeah. But are they going to be better as a run blocking offensive line? I don't know. And they will be, but it's still, even with Teron Armstead, is it an above average offensive line? Is it good enough? It's probably good enough. Hopefully. Chase Edmonds is going after the Seahawks running backs, just ahead of Melvin Gordon. He's going in the 90s. Is that too late for Chase Edmonds?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Would you rather have Chase Edmonds or Tony Pollard?
Edmonds for me.
Edmonds as of now, but that could change depending on Mostert's health.
Okay. All right. Let's do some news and notes here. Why is my phone beeping? Can you hear my phone? It's on vibrate, and it's still beeping.
Well, we got good news that we could share at some point.
No, yeah, we can't share it now. But yes, we got good news. We'll share it at some point. News and notes, big stuff on J.K. Dobbins, big stuff on literally on Leonard Fournette. But before we do that, I want to tell you we have a live mock draft coming up today at 1 p.m. Eastern time on youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Be there. It is a non-PPR mock draft, and we don't do a ton of these, so if you're in a non-PPR league, bring it on. If you're not in a non-PPR league, it's still the draft's going to be, you know, it's going to be different, but still plenty of things that you can learn from it. So Tara Roberts,
we're going to talk about players.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to talk about players. And I love your questions because, you know, we don't want to have the same conversations all the time. So we need you there to ask us good questions, bring up interesting topics. And that will be at youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you miss it, you can catch it on demand. And by the way, vote for us, podcastawards.com. Okay, I'll give you a break from that.
Best male podcast host.
Well, obviously. News and notes. The Bucks coaches.
Oh, wait, Heath, you got a point. Tell them where to draft.
What?
Oh, the other.
Oh, yeah, point
I'm
to.
I'm never up here. I'm always at the bottom.
Scan the QR code. There you go. Tampa Bay coaches were not happy with Leonard Fournette skipping OTAs and then showing up for the mandatory minicamp. Overweight. Very overweight, according to, well, that's my editorializing, sorry. Overweight, according to Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. But yeah, he wasn't a good start to the offseason. I don't know what he weighs right now, but Jamie, is this a big deal? Does this knock Leonard Fournette out of the second round if you're drafting today, which we are?
I mean, I hope it does in the leagues I'm in. You know, this is going to be one of these stories that we're going to see. You know, there's a handful every offseason. Last year, we know one of the big ones was Jonathan Taylor and the injuries around him, and that dropped his price, and he was fantastic. This is another one that's going to continue to probably linger a little bit. You know, it happened a little bit sooner because it was mini camp as opposed to training camp. But two things. One, you should still draft Fournette in the second round if you believe in him. But also, it will drive up the price of Rashad White. And so if you're out on Rashad White, that's good for you. But if you're in on Rashad White, and he doesn't go up, then he's still a guy that I'm targeting as well. Because not with the report about Fournette being overweight, but if Fournette does get hurt, I think Rashad White is the guy that's going to step in and play well.
So one thing I thought was interesting, didn't realize, the Buccaneers the last two seasons with Brady, they've been 29th and 31st in rush attempts. And they've had 13 and 14 running back rushing touchdowns, which isn't great. And Leonard Fournette, you know, his 17-game pace in his first 13 games, he left week 15 with an injury. He only averaged 13.2 carries per game, but he was on pace for 81 catches. And we saw it two seasons ago. When you had two guys splitting the work, really was not good for fantasy. So even though this has been a great offense, what really boosted Leonard Fournette was the catches, because he didn't really rank up there, you know, 13.5 carries per game, 13.2 carries per game. That's really nothing special. He didn't score a ton of rushing touchdowns either. So my point is, you know, if it's not Fournette, or if they split it, this is a bit of a warning sign to me. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but you kind of need an every down back based on the way they've distributed the touches the last two seasons. If you don't have an every down back in this backfield, I don't think you're going to have a fantasy starter. Not a consistent one.
Low end number two.
I don't know.
I mean, I think the passing game role is so important here.
Well, I know. But let's say it's Rashad White, and then they say, okay, well, Gio Bernard is going to get the passing. You know what I mean? If they don't give him all of the work.
I mean, we fell for Gio Bernard. This is what was huge for Fournette last year, is that we fell for the Gio Bernard signing, in that this was going to be the new James White, the new Danny Woodhead, the new Kevin Faulk, the guy that Brady's going to lean on. And he barely played when he was healthy, and he's had a hard time staying healthy.
No, I'm sorry. But, so I'm saying if it's not Fournette, then if it's not Fournette, if he gets hurt or he gets benched or something like that.
Might be Keyshawn Vaughn.
Right.
Could be Keyshawn Vaughn.
If they split up the carries, they don't run the ball enough. And if they have just a passing downs guy, they don't run the ball enough.
I don't know that we should expect a committee, just because right now all we've seen is that Leonard Fournette's the only running back that Tom Brady trusts, and so he's the only one gets to play very much. It's probably just going to be one guy, Tom Brady. Like, he doesn't trust any of the other three right now.
And last year, Keyshawn Vaughn was that guy when Fournette was out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I did think it was interesting that they don't run the ball. I guess I didn't really realize that. 31st and 29th in rush attempts last two seasons.
I think the thing, you know, to keep in mind, there's a few factors here. One, they may be down Godwin for X amount of weeks, potentially, which means without Godwin, without Gronk, do they run the ball a little bit more? You know,
I would
say no, but it's a possibility. There's a new head coach, you know, so we'll see what Todd Bowles wants to do by comparison to what Bruce Arians did. Now, I say that tongue in cheek, sort of, because we know that Brady is probably the one calling plays with Byron Leftwich as well, as opposed to Todd Bowles maybe having any involvement in the offense at all. But they also lost two offensive linemen, you know, so keep that in mind too. You know, they're replacing two guards.
Yeah.
So their offense might not be as potent from a standpoint of what they want to do, how they want to do it, how they want to get accomplished. A lot of changes for, you know, this Bucks offense right now. I'm going to guess they're going to be fine, but you know, there are some things in play here.
J.K. Dobbins tweeted that he may not even go on the PUP list, and he is confident he's going to be ready.
You got to tell the whole story because he just dunked on Ian Rappaport.
Yeah, Ian Rappaport, well, that's part of my note here. Ian Rappaport said that J.K. Dobbins may not be ready for week one, and Dobbins was not defiant. He was defiant. He said he'll be ready for week one.
Yeah, you should read the quote. Like, most of the Twitter football doctors have been very worried about J.K. Dobbins' recovery. And most of them are just speaking in generalities about people who have multiple ligaments damaged and how much longer that takes. And what Rappaport said, more like he was talking to those Twitter football doctors. And I don't think Dobbins appreciated that.
I don't think Rapsheet was doing that. I think he was probably speaking to a source with the team, would be my guess. And to be fair, for what he said was more about week one, which is still, what, a month away? Month and a half away?
Yeah, oh yeah, a month and a half.
So there's a lot of time for him to be ready for week one. Now, Dobbins' reply was, I don't even expect to go on the PUP list, but Baltimore is going to be very, very cautious with him. I don't care what Dobbins thinks or wants to do. They're not going to rush him out there if he's not ready to go.
He says, I'm damn sure I'm going to be ready for the season opener. And meanwhile, I still don't know what the deal is with Gus Edwards. And I'm wondering if we should be drafting Mike Davis late.
In that clip, Rep said that Gus Edwards seemed more likely to be ready than Dobbins.
Okay, well then Gus Edwards is a huge steal. What did I say? He was going 160th or something like that?
I just don't know. Like, what do you think the upside in touches for Gus Edwards is? 15 a game?
With a healthy Dobbins?
No. If Dobbins is out.
I mean, we've already seen that. We saw that.
They're not going to throw it to him.
2 years ago. And I'll give you the numbers because this is the same thing we talked about.
5 yards a carry
last year.
Gus Edwards, the week before the season started, was a second round pick last year.
In 2019. Was it 2019? It was the end. He was the starting running back. I'm sorry. You know what? I will find it. I'll come back to me. But remember, in 2019, he had a long stretch where he was with rookie Lamar Jackson, the starting running back.
So in 2019, he had one game with more than 14
2018,
carries.
I'm sorry. Okay.
2018.
2018, it was, look at this stretch here. It was a seven-game stretch. He averaged 17.4 carries per game. He averaged 5.4 yards per carry. He only scored 2 touchdowns. He was on pace for 296 carries, 1,588 yards, 5 touchdowns, and only 2 catches in 17 games. But he did average 17.4 carries per game. That was with rookie Lamar Jackson taking over and Gus Edwards.
On a terrible team.
Yeah.
And so Gus he could Edwards. Have like...
They actually went 6-1 in those games. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, well, they turned it on late. Yeah.
No.
Go ahead, Heath.
He could have Damian Harris upside for the period of time that J.K. Dobbins was out.
He's a steal at his ADP.
Oh, yeah, right. 160, right? So crazy. He was on the board when we did our show yesterday, and then by the time I got up again, he was off the board in my Scott Fishbowl league because, you know.
Who'd you end up taking?
Who'd I take? Oh, I think Tyler Higbee. It was like round 15. I don't remember that pick, but. No, you know what? I think I took James Robinson. James Robinson lasted a really long time. Then I took Tyler Higbee after that. One more note, not a huge deal, but Rams defensive tackle Bobby Brown suspended 6 games for violating the PED policy. He is depth for them, and I'm sure he will be missed for those 6 games. We will take a quick break. We'll be back to talk more about the toughest players to rank. Trey Lance, DK Metcalf, who else? Dallas Goedert, Breece Hall, Marquise Brown, Jalen Waddle. We'll get more into him when we come back on Fantasy Football Today.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Trey Lance played 2.5 games last season. In one half against the Seahawks, he scored 24.4 fantasy points, and that was in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues. In one start against the Cardinals, only 14.6 fantasy points, but he did rush for 89 yards. And then in his second start against Houston in week 17, he scored 23.1 fantasy points. So pretty good in the limited playing time he had. And Heath, he is one of your toughest players to rank. Could you see him getting into the top 12?
Unlikely without an injury to one of the guys in the top 12. Like I could see him, let me clarify. I don't see him getting into my top 12 quarterbacks in the rankings. I could absolutely see him finishing in the top 12. That's why he's so difficult. Finish as a top three quarterback.
I meant the rankings.
The way that he runs with.
Just to clarify the question.
With the way that he runs and the weapons that he has around him and the things that Kyle Shanahan's system has done for quarterbacks in the past in terms of passing efficiency, there's every reason to hope that he could be a top 3 to 5 quarterback this year. It's also pretty scary for me just because of how little we've seen Trey Lance play football, not just last year, but really against good competition ever. And the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo is still on the roster.
I wonder, is this a guy that you're going to have to end up reaching for and be okay with it because you can still fall back with a good option? But you might have to take him sort of ahead of his ADP because
the problem I have is that I have a hard time taking him ahead of Fields, and he always goes a couple rounds before Fields, it seems like.
Jamie, you don't have that problem. You have him 15th and you have Fields 19th.
Yeah, I don't have that problem at all. I think there's so much more upside for Lance based on the team that he plays for and the offense. It's not about a talent thing for these two. It's just about situation. And I think if Lance does, I said this, I don't know, 2 weeks ago or so, the minute Garoppolo is traded and I don't have to worry about that anymore, Lance will be in my top 10. There's the chance for him to be this year's Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, you know, the guy that we have some concerns, questions about that ends up having that breakout season. I think he's next in line for that. So you said it, Adam. There's very easy scenarios. I know you do this a lot in our drafts, which is the only reason I criticize you because you do it in our drafts. But if you know your league is taking two quarterbacks, or more importantly, if you know your league is not taking two quarterbacks, it's very easy, or the majority of managers are taking two quarterbacks. In a 1QB format, it's very easy to take Lance and then come back and get a Kirk Cousins or a Derek Carr or maybe even a Matthew Stafford or Aaron Rodgers and have your concerns about him failing, which are legitimate, making you feel a lot better about that. You know, and it's not just necessarily those guys. I mean, you can still take, you know, the lesser lower ceiling type of guys, you know, Tua, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, you can pair these guys together. Lance is a league winner if he's able to get this job and build off what he showed us last season.
Yeah, I know it's small sample size. I'm going to do the math one more time just to make sure I'm not wrong. 41 plus 89 plus 31 over 10 quarters times 4, that's 64 yards per game, times 17, that's almost 1,100 rushing yards. Based on the 10 quarters that he played as a quarterback and not a gadget player, you know, on pace for 1,095 rushing yards per 17 games, how are you not going to be a must-start quarterback if you're running that much? And that's what he did in college in the 1 year that he played, basically. He ran for 1,100 yards. So it's just, you know, he would have to be so bad passing the ball.
It's almost exactly, as long as Garoppolo's on the roster, the Hurts conundrum from last year, because that was the whole argument against Hurts was, well, he could be so bad passing the ball that he could lose his job.
Yeah, that's true. But this is a position, I think, where you're not as worried about guys losing their
job.
You
swing for the fences in this position.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, let's do, we did Zeke. How about DK Metcalf? Heath, what makes DK Metcalf difficult to rank?
He's an elite wide receiver playing with Drew Lock and Geno Smith on a team coached by Pete Carroll. It's everything about DK I love, and everything about his situation I hate, including the fact that he's still going to share with Tyler Lockett. Lockett's not going to go away. So a low volume, low efficiency pass offense where I think it's unlikely he gets to that 30% target share that would make him invincible. It's really scary, but it's hard to look at a guy who runs and plays like he does and looks like he does and say, yeah, it's a dumb pick in round four. I don't want to take him in round four, but look at him.
I was also reading the PFF, Pro Football Focus, offensive line rankings for the season, and they tier them. They rank them and they tier them, but 32nd and in the last tier was the Seahawks. So that's another thing that's a little scary for him.
The only hope with that would be that their offensive line's so bad that they can't run the ball and they eventually just have to throw it 35 times a game.
Tell me if this matters to you. I won't even say how I feel about it, but it just seems like I don't want to pick and choose because I like Metcalf. I don't want to pick and choose who I do these kinds of stats with. But in the first 8 games of the 2020 season, you know, Russell Wilson was throwing for 307 yards per game. He was on pace for over 5,200 yards and 63 touchdown passes in 17 games. Russell Wilson was on fire. That was the 2020 season first 8 games. DK Metcalf averaged 98.5 yards per game with extraordinary quarterback play. If you remove those games from his career, he's averaging 52 yards per game, I think. If you remove his rookie season and just look at the year and a half since those 8 games, he's averaging 58 yards per game. No, 59 yards per game.
If you take off his left arm.
Sorry, okay. If you take away those 8 games for his career, it is 58 yards per game. The 25 games he's played
for 62 yards per game.
Yeah, but the thing is, he had incredible quarterback play for those 8 games. Lockett is a problem. Lockett gets so many targets, so it's not even like he's on this bad passing offense and he's a total target hog. But I struggle with him too, Heath, because God, he's so good and he can still score those touchdowns. Jamie, is he hard for you? Is hard to rank DK Metcalf?
Tremendously hard. Yeah, this was one of the guys. Heath answered your question first when you asked us guys to rank. He was the first one that came to mind. Mm. You look at the games because this is the small sample size. Without Russell Wilson last year, and it's so weird because he had the 2 touchdown game against Jacksonville in week 8, but that was on 6 targets. He had 6 catches for 43 yards. The weird game is the New Orleans game when he had the huge touchdown, 2 catches for 96 yards and the score on 5 targets. And then he had 7 targets, 6 catches, 58 yards in week 6 against Pittsburgh. So you're looking at 6 targets per game if that's kind of the focal point there.
Oh, God. That would be terrible. 6 right. targets per game.
Right. 2 of those, he had 2 6 catch games, but that's not, I think something you can expect that high of a catch rate with Geno Smith. It'd be worse, in my opinion, if it's Drew Lock because of what we've seen from Drew Lock. And then, sure, he scored 3 touchdowns over that, but one of those, again, was a broken tackle by, I think it was Lattimore in the Saints game, and then scoring twice against Jacksonville. So he's got still the upside to, outperform his quarterback play, but it's just so concerning based on the quarterback play. And so for the most part, I'm typically out on him in our drafts. Dave has been the one that usually reaches for Metcalf, taking him in round 4. I think he's starting to get uncomfortable with that. I don't want to speak for him, but it feels like every time he reviews his teams for us, that's kind of the sentiment. He's certainly a round 5 pick for me at this point. And, I continue to drop him. He's barely in the top 24 for me right now.
Do you think this feels realistic? 1,038 yards, 9 touchdowns. Is that too many
yards? Yes, I'd go under on the touchdown.
Okay.
I've got him at 1,058.7.
That feels closer. I would still probably go under on the touchdowns too.
Because here's the thing. Jaylen Waddle had 1,015 yards. The numbers I gave you originally were Hunter Renfrow, but if you think the touchdowns are too high. So we'll go to Waddle. 1,015 yards and 6 touchdowns. And he was a top 12 receiver, but only in PPR because he had 104 catches.
Right.
Yeah, Metcalf, he's just not going to be a high catch guy probably unless he just changes his profile, runs shorter routes. Where did Waddle finish? Waddle finished 20th in non-PPR. He only played 16 games, but probably about that in per game too. Okay, would you rather have Deontay Johnson or DK Metcalf?
Deontay Johnson.
Deontay.
Darnell Mooney or DK Metcalf?
Mooney.
Right now Metcalf, but that's close.
McLaurin or Metcalf?
McLaurin.
McLaurin.
Lockett 3 rounds later or Metcalf?
Lockett 3 rounds later.
Yeah.
Okay. Final guy for Heath is Dallas Goedert. Dallas Goedert. Here are the his combination of ADOT and catch rate is really, really impressive. He had a 73.7% catch rate last year. Here are the tight ends who had a higher catch rate than Goedert in 2021. Minimum 50 targets. Uzama, Gerald Everett, Freiermuth, Fant, Kittle, Dalton Schultz. None of them had a higher ADOT than Goedert. So I don't know if there's a stat that combines the two stats, but it's, you know, look, the logic here, if you're not big on these stats, it's easier to catch a high rate of your targets when you're running shorter routes. For a tight end, he does not run short routes. He runs, you know, he's got a pretty high ADOT for a tight end, and he still has one of the highest catch rates. It's really impressive. And that's 2 years in a row where he's done that. So what is difficult for you to rank? Is it just like you think he's really good, but you don't love the situation? What's the deal with Goedert here?
Well, I mean, part of it's what happened last year after Ertz was gone. He was on a 1,000-yard pace after Ertz left as a tight end, which is incredible. Had 92 yards in the playoffs, but he didn't score hardly any touchdowns. Now, as a rule, I'd just say touchdown regression is coming. Dallas Goedert's going to be a steal because people are not drafting him high enough. But A.J. Brown got added. And so how that impacts Goedert and how it impacts the offense in terms of how much they throw is really a bit of a mystery. Because if they just go to like 520 pass attempts this year and Brown mostly impacts the wide receiver targets, then there's 100% a path for Dallas Goedert to be the number three tight end in fantasy this year.
Oh, wow. That 520 pass attempts, that what you said?
Yeah.
And that would be what?
In terms if he keeps the same target share and A.J. Brown just impacts the wide receivers, as we've talked about.
No, I'm sorry. How much? That's toward the bottom in pass attempts, middle?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there were only, I think, two teams below 500 last year.
Okay.
520 is 31 pass attempts a game.
Do you see that potential for him, Jamie? Top three tight end? The number three tight end for Goedert?
I think it would probably take some injuries for that to happen or just an obscene amount of touchdowns. But, you know, I think it's so funny with Goedert because I'm excited about him to an extent. Like, there's the clear top five. I think Schultz is the bridge to the next group. He's closer to the top five, but I think he's still the bridge guy. And then you get to the next two, in my opinion, are Goedert and Hockenson. Those are two that I struggle with of who's the better option of the two. But it feels like we keep making excuses for Goedert. Zach Ertz is still there. Then Zach Ertz is gone, oh, they run the ball too much. And, you know, now A.J. Brown is here. Is how much of that is going to impact? How much better is Devontae Smith going to be? How much does Jalen Hurts run? But I do think that Sirianni comes from the Frank Reich system. I think that system that wants to lean on their tight ends. I think Goedert is clearly going to be in the top three of targets for this team. And I hope this is the year that he can get to that, that 8 touchdown range. I think this is the year he can get to hopefully, you know, north of 800 yards. He's got that potential. He's just got to finally fulfill it. But we can't keep making excuses for him anymore. He's finally got to start to deliver.
And would you, right now, would you take Hockenson or Goedert?
Goedert.
This is one I go back and forth on every time I even look at my projections, but I think right now I have Goedert higher.
And in a non-PPR or a half PPR league, would you take Goedert over Schultz?
No,
I would.
Okay. All right, let's take a look at the guys that Jamie finds difficult to rank. Let's start with Breece Hall. Yeah, big mystery here. What are you trying to find out in training camp? What do you want to see or read about Breece Hall that'll give you some more confidence in where you're going to rank him?
I mean, that he's definitely dominating the workload ahead of Michael Carter, that they're going to throw the ball to him and use his, you know, pass catching skills. Zach Wilson being better, offensive line staying healthy. There are a lot of questions, you know. And so you've noted this. There's typically a rookie running back that has a phenomenal season. He should be that guy. I hope he's that guy. But it's a matter of not necessarily, you know, ranking him as a safe RB2 option, because I don't know if you want to use the word safe, but, you know, when you mentioned it, the group that he's around, him versus Zeke, him versus Etienne, him versus Jacobs and Gibson, you know, he's in that mix of guys. I hope he's better than all of them, but, you know, I still have my concerns. So, yeah, there's some questions that I'm looking to see get answered in training camp for sure, preseason game.
And first off, we just need him to report. I believe today is the day he's supposed to, and he's officially now a holdout.
Mm-hmm. Breece Hall, get in there, buddy. We have had a top 12 rookie running back in 6 of the last 7 seasons, and we've had at least 2 top 17 rookie running backs in 7 straight seasons. That's in non-PPR. That streak might end this year. 2 top 17 rookie running backs in 7 straight seasons in non-PPR. But, you know, actually, 2 of the last 3 years, the rookie running backs have been a bit disappointing. 2019, Josh Jacobs and Miles Sanders were good, but they didn't finish top 12. And last year, you had Najee Harris, who was great, but Javonte Williams was number 2, and he did not finish in the top 15, and he wasn't top 20 per game. I hope that's not a trend, but the rookie running backs are often tremendous values. If they can get the workload that they need, they're just phenomenal values. You know, is Michael Carter a big obstacle for him? Carter was pretty good last year. Is he a big obstacle, you think, or just kind of a minor hiccup along the way?
Okay. Hiccup.
In between, I think. But they clearly felt they needed an upgrade. You know, this wasn't they talked about trading back into the first round to get him.
Do you think the Jets have an average offense this year?
Yes. But, you know, Wilson's going to determine that. Zach Wilson.
Not bottom 5, but below average, we might guess.
Okay. Talked about Chase Edmonds already. Let me ask a few more Breece Hall questions real quick. Would you rather have Breece Hall or Josh Jacobs?
Breece Hall.
Jacobs for now.
Breece Hall or Gibson?
Hall.
I go back and forth, but I'm going to lean Gibson for now.
Okay, on to Jaylen Waddle, and then we'll finish with Marquise Brown. So, I guess you like Waddle better than Brown?
I like Brown better than Waddle in non-PPR, Waddle better than Brown in PPR and half PPR.
Oh, gosh, I hate this Jaylen Waddle situation. He would be ordinarily one of my favorite breakouts with that kind of rookie season. And yep. We didn't even see his real potential unleashed until kind of later in the year, because the guy, he was just catching a lot of short passes and piling up the catches, and he wasn't doing what he does best, which is run away from people. He is a speed demon, a big play maker, and they bring in Tyreek Hill, and it's just, you just don't see, like I said, you just don't see these rookie wide receivers who have, you know, big rookie years get that kind of added competition. And it happened for Waddle, and it happened for Devontae Smith, and that's really annoying. So I share your frustration, Jamie. I'm sure everybody does. I think the last time we spoke about Jaylen Waddle, though, we kind of said that we weren't taking him at his ADP, which was sort of the end of round 4, because we felt the upside was limited. Do you feel that way?
Totally. And I'm glad that it's the end of round 4, because in some cases it was in round 3 still when we were first talking about this. So look, he was the guy last year, and he was the guy with Parker missing time. He was the guy with, you know, Gesicki kind of in a weird role. This system, the only thing that really I think can save him, aside from maybe an injury to Tyreek Hill, save him from not being, save him from that he can still be worth drafting in the round 4 range, is what this system usually has done for players once they get the ball in their hands.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's dangerous. I mean, he's got so much. I mean, that's the fun part about this offense. Like, I can't wait to see. I believe I was on a radio show yesterday. They asked me about the over-under, and I don't want to misquote it, but I think it was under 1,000 yards. I think he could still be a 1,000-yard receiver. I think both guys can still be 1,000-yard receivers. That's asking a lot of Tua, but I think it's possible because of the system. But I don't think it's going to be much over 1,000 yards. I'm curious, Heath, what you have both Tyreek and Waddle projected for. But I think, you know, when you just look at these two guys in particular, A, there's the chance of an injury to either one, which I think would make the another guy, the healthier one, top 10. But if both stay healthy, I just think they're going to cannibalize each other enough because I don't think there's going to be enough touchdowns in this offense. And that's the problem. And so Waddle's not getting 140 targets if Tyreek's healthy. He's probably getting closer to 100, maybe 120 tops. And so can he still be as successful with that number with Tua?
Yeah, I think I'm the outlier probably in terms of the projections on these two, because I actually right now have Tyreek and Waddle projected for the same number of targets. I do think the other thing that could save Waddle is his relationship and rapport with Tua, and the fact that apparently Tyreek was unhappy playing on the Chiefs last year because he wasn't getting the ball enough or wasn't getting the ball in a way that he wants to. And that type of discontent could manifest itself very quickly in this situation if things don't go the way that he wants them to go early in the season. So like, I think it's underrated, the idea that Waddle could be better than Tyreek this year, even if they're both healthy.
I just came up right now with, I'm actually going to get a fourth. Three teams in recent memory that had two 1,000-yard receivers. I'm going to look at the Seahawks in 2020. DK Metcalf, 1,300. Tyler Lockett, 1,054. Remember, this is all going to be 16 games. Number three on the team was David Moore with 417 yards. How about the Cleveland Browns? I just remember this because I kept bringing it up with Baker Mayfield. Cleveland Browns in 2019, Jarvis Landry had almost 1,200 yards. Odell Beckham was over 1,000 yards. Kareem Hunt was third on the team with 285 yards. And then this one's a little bit more more evenly distributed. The Rams in 2019 had Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods both go over 1,100 yards, and Tyler Higbee had 734 yards, and that was a really good year for Goff. They threw for almost 4,700 yards, 22 touchdowns. But my point here is I do not understand what people are expecting from Mike Gesicki and why they like him. Because if those guys are going to go over 1,000 yards, the number three guy is not going to put up a big number unless Tua is going to win the MVP.
You could use more recent example, like the Bengals last year. Jamar Chase had 1,400, Higgins had almost 1,100, and Tyler Boyd had 800.
Yeah, that's not very good.
Well, if Gesicki has 800 yards, it's going to be very good.
Nah, not really. It's really not. 800 yards in 17 games, it's not even 50 yards a game. It's fine. It's streamable. He'd have to make up for it in touchdowns.
But how many people are drafting Gesicki as a number one tight end?
I feel like he is, I don't know. I feel like he's in that discussion at the end. I didn't want to make this about Gesicki.
Well, once you get past like the top 10 guys, everybody's kind of in the discussion, right?
I don't even think he should be, personally. But I guess it's just so bad at that point. He's tight end 11 in Fantasy Pros PPR ADP, ahead of Freiermuth, ahead of Cole Kmet. And maybe it's just maybe that this is a topic for another show, but maybe this is why you don't want to wait that long for tight end. But that's just the way I see it. Anyway,
I like greater late.
that's the thing. Gesicki is not part of the late strategy for me. Is he for you? Where do you guys have him?
Yeah,
he absolutely is.
How? If you both wide receivers are going over 1,000 yards and Chase Edmonds is involved in the passing, like what is left for Gesicki? How does he pull it off?
I mean, again, it's more the player and the situation. So
you talk about excuses. We make excuses for Gesicki all the time. What has he done?
But that's the reason why, for me, he's not tight end 11, and the reason why I would only take him if he's late.
You have him 12th, Dave 17th, Heath 15th. But you do have Kmet ahead of him at 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Irv Smith is behind Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and maybe KJ Osborne. And Zach Ertz, after 6 weeks, is probably behind DeAndre Hopkins and Marquise Brown. Gerald Everett's behind Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Pat Freiermuth's behind Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool and Najee Harris.
Like, that's why I like Komet. That's why I like Komet and Knox.
Yeah.
Knox is behind like 12.
What are you talking about?
Knox is not
Knox
behind
like six
Knox,
guys.
Knox is not. That's the thing. You don't know that. He has the potential to be ahead. He has the potential for more targets than you guys give him credit for. You don't know that he's going to be that low.
Based on what, the 50 that he had last year?
They had Cole Beasley and they had Emmanuel Sanders. What do they have
and now?
Now
they have Jamison Crowder.
Jamison Crowder,
Herbert.
Come on now. Jamison Crowder.
Khalil Herbert.
Khalil Shakir. I mean, I obviously like Komet better, but.
What if O.J. Howard's better than Dawson Knox?
I mean, the last report we got on O.J. Howard was not good at all. All right, sorry for the detour there.
There's questions on all those guys.
Absolutely, 100%.
Who you should really like is Evan Engram.
Oh, please.
He could be first on his team in targets. Literally might be.
Marquise Brown, Jamie. Marquise Brown is the last guy you want to talk about. So, all right, what's the difficulty here?
I mean, it feels like we're ranking a six-game season for Marquise Brown. it's so fascinating because he could be better than DeAndre Hopkins and, you know, certainly be worth ranking as a top 20 receiver and drafting him that high. But this there's that situation looming when DeAndre Hopkins comes back. He just pointed it out. You know, Zach Ertz is still there. Cliff Kingsbury keeps talking a lot about Rondale Moore and his role. We don't even say AJ Green's name, but he's still on the team. They throw to James Conner. You know, there's a lot of mouths to feed here. And so, yes, that six games could be amazing for what Marquise Brown gives you. But what the hell is going to happen in week seven and beyond? That's the majority of the season there. So, you know, I mean, Hopkins was a shell of himself last year, battled through injuries, and is missing six games. But if he's anything close to the DeAndre Hopkins we know, man, it's going to be tough for Marquise Brown to be fantastic from week seven on.
It is tough. So Mooney or Marquise Brown?
Right now it's Brown, but I struggle with it.
I have Mooney higher.
How about Allen Robinson or Marquise Brown?
Robinson.
Brown for me.
So you like Marquise Brown more than Jamie does, Heath?
I have him 25th, I think. 24th or 25th, maybe 23rd. Borderline number two. I think he could be a top 12 wide receiver the first 6 weeks of the season and then maybe a number three the rest of the way. So how do you rank that?
I mean, that's basically like, you know what it feels like it could be? Like Mike Williams last year.
Yeah, well, don't get Heath started on Mike Williams. That's going to be a bigger tangent than Mike Gesicki.
Yeah.
Well, Dave is really the high guy on
Marquise
Brown.
Be awesome
Marquise
if he was
Brown.
Mike Williams last year.
It would be for 4 weeks, yeah, or five.
Be awesome for the last eight as well.
No. Dave has Marquise Brown 17th in his PPR
rankings.
Yeah,
I can't
rankings.
Do that.
Yeah, he really likes Marquise Brown.
Well, you remember, what was the draft that we did? Was it last week or the last live one I did with you? Where Dave took Marquise Brown like in round three and he was like, I'm doing it.
And then, and then he regretted it.
And like two rounds later, he was like, why did I do that?
I have to correct myself.
Is Marquise Brown and Amari Cooper. You can start Marquise Brown the first six games and then start Amari Cooper after that.
Maybe. Are you assuming Watson back?
Maybe.
I have to correct myself on Jalen Waddle's ADP. I said end of round four. It's more on Fantasy Pros, it's 41. So that's mid round four. And on NFC in the last almost 3 weeks, it's 33rd or 34th.
I don't get it.
I think some of those are probably dynasty drafts, but I've got him 43rd, so I'm there with Fantasy Pros, slightly behind, I guess. But
okay, that's gonna do it for today's show. We'll read your emails later this week. We'll have a mailbag tomorrow. Jacob Gibbs coming on for some advanced stats. Remember to tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern for our live stream, our non-PPR 12-team draft. And for Jamie and Heath, I'm Adam. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.